First, I think need to express from all of us in India that it gives us a great pleasure for us to be here, and especially for us who have come from the All India People Science Network, because we feel important as it is to understand why the history behind why and how we are sitting in this hall, perhaps of much greater importance and which will play out in the next 2 days, is starting to understand the different experiences and the different positions from which all of us come from. And if at the end of these 2 days we can say that we have started understanding each other, I think that's a great advance forward. And the issue of thinking about new ways of doing science needs to start amongst us in this hall. So from that very short expectation that we have from this forum, let me start by stating what's something very obvious, but at times it's important to state the obvious, which is that global capital is what drives science today. Now, there was a certain person which many of you in this hall would be familiar with who had said, being determines consciousness. And the dominant paradigm of capitalism today is really what drives science. And I think in the first session, we had a number of interventions of people talking about how the fact that capitalism drives science is moving science in a certain direction. Now, what I would like to submit here is that that has made an impact both in the way science is produced and in the way science is reproduced. Now, classically, science was produced in institutions of, within quotes, higher learning, which were relatively autonomous of both the state and the market. And thereby, there was this possibility of such institutions giving rise to contestations between scientists, which would give rise to knowledge of a certain kind. Now, we see that kind of a situation really disappearing today, where science is produced in an environment which is increasingly directly or indirectly controlled by capital and the market, either directly funded by corporates or governments working in favor of corporates to produce knowledge or science. And second, if you look at the way science is reproduced today, what we are starting to see is that increasingly something which is a common heritage of mankind or humankind is being closeted in fewer and fewer hands through the medium of intellectual property rights and other such media. Now, the reason why this transformation has really come about, one is the transformation that has come about in the blurring of the difference between science and technology. Now, there was a time when it was not perfectly, but it was possible to argue that you had this fairly sort of well-defined continuum where science produced knowledge, and that was transformed into artifacts, which then was taken up by the market. Now, that kind of a distinction ceases to exist in many cases now. And you have a situation where, say, a very small advance in genetics can immediately be transformed into something that can be sold in the market, or you can profit from it in the market. And that has gone hand in hand with the situation where the rate of technological innovation has increased tremendously. And as a result, you almost have a situation where there is a race for putting more and more technological artifacts at the demand of the market. So that is what I mean when I say that the global capital today is driving the way knowledge is produced or reproduced. We are also starting to see the funding of research, or the direction in which research proceeds, being increasingly controlled by global capital, either directly, as I was saying. But we are also seeing in the neoliberal economic order, developing countries, for example, being starved of funds, and then looking at corporates for funding of research. We are seeing the UN system, for example, itself, instead of talking about collaborative research, talking about public-private partnerships as the way out of how research is to be funded. Now, this entire situation leads to a condition where, for example, today, just to give you one example which all of us in this hall would be familiar with, has pushed the continent of Africa into a situation where we are not talking about a few hundred or a few thousand, but millions of people have died from the HIV/AIDS epidemic. Now, numbers, and especially if the numbers concern certain areas of the globe, often beyond a point, stop having any meaning. But I repeat, we are talking about millions of deaths from an epidemic for which the human mind, the human creation, did come up with an answer. So these people who have died and are still dying are dying not because there was no remedy, but because global capital has decided that this knowledge will not be shared except at a certain cost. So this is really the backdrop in which we are talking about what Valerie called the knowledge commons. Because what we are seeing today is an encirclement of the private appropriation of what traditionally has always been public. Now, it started 500 years back, the encirclement of the commons and the private appropriation started with physically definable structures. It started with the privatization of forests, of land, of water resources, of other natural resources. But today, in a way, we have come to the ultimate culmination of the privatization of the commons, where the highest creation of the human mind is sought to be privatized and privately appropriated. But interestingly, it is from the womb of this system itself that we see arising the answer to this system, which is, as Valerie was talking about, of the whole movement towards knowledge commons. It started, as all of you would know, with, for example, the free software movement, where you had a global community of people developing their own rules, developing their own ways in which the common knowledge could be shared and could be improved upon. But it's gone on to now include various other ways of doing science, of producing knowledge. You have, for example, the Open Biology Initiative. You have, for example, the Open Source Drug Discovery Initiative. Now, I would submit that knowledge commons, as we see it today, and the movement for knowledge commons as we see it today, is similar but different from other commons movements, for example, the environmental movement or the ecological movements, because the ecological or the environmental movements are attempting to retain in the public domain something that is finite. Today, there is a realization that the natural resources of this globe are finite. They are not infinite, and they need to be used in a certain manner, and that is why you need public control, public scrutiny, and public interest as parts of the way you organize it. Whereas when we are talking about knowledge commons, it is about liberating something that has always been infinite. Knowledge has always been infinite. In fact, the attempt to put knowledge within boundaries which are privately held is an artificial attempt, which I would submit cannot succeed, because knowledge, when it is restricted, stops growing. So the knowledge commons movement, really, is a movement of liberating science. And I would finish here by saying that who are the carriers of this? We have talked about the social responsibility of scientists something that is very necessary. I would submit something beyond this. I would say that we also need to redefine what we mean by scientists. And in the people science movement, we do not see scientists as only those who work within institutions, who have a certain grounding in basic research. Because we feel that the carriers of science are also scientists. And they are really going to be the people who will take forward the movement for knowledge commons so that it becomes a global movement. And I would stop by saying that it's too important a task to be left only to quote-unquote scientists, because it concerns the liberation of possibly the highest creation of the human mind. Thank you.